Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on making money with hard money right after this message. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. Now, why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, liberty, and property from these incessant attacks by governmental agencies like OSHA or the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about silver and the great abundance of gold compared to silver. So, if we take a look at the total quantity of gold and silver available in the world, look at it this way. 3 billion ounces of gold at $400 an ounce amounts to about $1,200 billion. That's $1,200,000,000,000. That's the value of the entire ready-to-come-to-market gold stock. With spot silver at $5.50 and 737 million ounces would bring just a little over $4 billion. Now, for comparison's sake, the world's currency markets trade about $1 trillion a day. That's right, $1,000 billion. That's $1 trillion a day. Just take one company, General Motors common stock, at $50 a share and 460 million shares outstanding. The market capitalization of General Motors, which is only one of 30 Dow Jones Industrial Average stocks, equals $22 billion. About 5.5 times the value of all of the identifiable silver stocks in the entire world. So in other words, the world's ready-to-market silver stock equals only 0.3% of the ready-to-market gold stock. There's nearly 300 times as much gold for sale in the world today as there is silver. Now, we can look at the same issue from a slightly different angle. From spot gold at $400 an ounce, and spot silver at about $5 an ounce, gold would have to rise $40 to increase 10%. To increase the price of silver by 10%, silver would have to rise 50 cents. To raise the price of gold 10%, gold would have to attract $120 billion in new investment dollars, while silver would have to attract only $400 million. Silver gives more bang for the buck. The amount of new investment money necessary to raise the price of silver 10 cents is only 1/300th of the amount needed to raise the price of gold 10%. The smaller available inventory and the lower price make silver much more volatile than gold. Now remember, it's not the industrial use of silver that moves its price. It's its monetary value, its monetary use. So back in 1999, when Buffett bought, oh, I forgot how much it was now, $150 million worth of silver, or 150 million ounces, one or the other, what he did in effect was he took a big chunk of the available silver off the market. He's hanging on to it. That's what all of us buy metalists are doing. We're buying silver and just hanging on to it. It's what we use for our savings. Instead of saving money in the bank or putting money into stocks and bonds, we put money into silver. Just waiting for the inevitable correction. And when the correction comes, then we'll jump on it with both feet. But meanwhile, back on the farm, as I've pointed out in previous programs in the series, you don't have to wait until silver goes to 16 to 1. There have been five paydays since 1995. Five paydays over the last 9 years. Now, every time you make a payday, you take 20 or 25% increase in your silver or gold holdings, one or the other, every time there's a payday. Now, would you rather have a payday about, you know, once every 2 years? Or would you rather invest in stocks, which are in a primary bear market and are on their way down to 3,000? Now, if you take the real value of the stock market today, it's 3,000. It's priced at around 10,000. That means from its 11,700 peak, when all of the turmoil is over and all the new money has been spent and the election has been bought, the only way for stocks to go now is down, because they're already priced at more than they earn. In fact, stocks today are at a par where they were in 1987 and 1929 when the market collapsed. So you have three market collapses: 29, 87, and 2000. The stock market's price to earnings ratio today is on a par with those three events. We're not looking for stocks to go up higher and higher. We're looking at stocks to bottom out in a bear market. And when they do, they'll hit around 3,000. Now, real estate is the big bubble to be watching today, and I'll produce a series of programs on the housing market. I'll tell you the story about houses and housing. I know that your house is probably your biggest single investment. Now, if you're investing your money in your house because, like a lot of people, invest their money in numismatic coins, they have a hole in a folder that they want to fill up. Well, that's a hobby, and if that's what you want to do, get after it. But if you're trying to accumulate new wealth, if you're trying to make a profit, if you're in this to make money, well, then there's another strategy that you need to use. And so when we're talking about gold and silver, silver is volatile because there is such a short supply and because any billionaire can come along and manipulate the market. And every time that market goes up or down, there's profits to be made. In the period prior to 1873, there was no money to be made in the spread between gold and silver because the total price fluctuation from 1833 to 1873 in that 40-year period was only 4.86%. Well, you couldn't pay the brokerage fees on 4 or 5%. That thing has got to move in the neighborhood of 20 or 25%. And what we're looking for is that gold to silver price ratio. That occurs quite often. Not three times in a century, but I mean, it occurs about every 2 years. So there's a profit to take of 20 to 25% about every 2 years. It's been that way, you know, for at least the last 50 years. And the last big bull market broke in 1980, and the price of silver has been trending down. But listen, while the price of silver has been trending down to its historic bottom of about $3.50 an ounce, there were fluctuations in the gold-silver ratio that went up to 100 to 1. in that period? Well, not quite 100-1. I think it was only 96-1, but there's your peak. And now it's down to around 60-1. Look at the difference between 60 and 90. All right. Now, there's a good profit to take. Now, watch this. When you add to all of that silver's quirky demand and supply characteristics that make both supply and demand unresponsive to price in the short term, that is, remember, short term is less than a year, here are the conclusions. Silver gives more bang for your investment buck because the stock of silver is only 1/3 of 1% of the stock of gold. So a given amount of new investment money entering the silver market will drive its price much further than the same amount entering gold. Far less money will drive silver's price much further than gold. Two, silver available to investors is only a tiny fraction of gold available. By value, the silver stock ready and able to come to market is only 1/300th of the gold stock. Three, there is far less silver available than gold, and by the number of ounces, physical ounces, ready to market, gold outnumbers physical, ready to market silver by 4-1. And silver is much more volatile than gold. It goes up and down faster than gold, and that's where the profit's made. Relative to other markets, a tiny amount of new investment money entering the silver market will drive it much further than gold or other investments. And the silver market is small and thin compared to other investment markets. And five, if silver is more volatile than gold and the price of gold rises, then silver's price should rise faster than gold's in a precious metals bull market. Now, so far, we have not seen the panic-driven buying that you saw in 1980. That comes later when there's an economic collapse or there's a war or there's an oil embargo or something on that order. Then the investors, the little investors, all jump on the bandwagon. It reminds me of the Titanic with all of the people on the ship moving toward the stern as this bow is sinking, which makes all the sense in the world. Sure it does. On the surface, it makes all the sense in the world, unless you're the guy who has a life raft up in the bow of the ship, in which you're elbowing your way through the crowd saying, excuse me, pardon me, let me through, please. Now, everybody looks at you because you're contrary. You're going in the wrong direction. You're not going with all the rest of the people, the majority. Today, people listen to CNN and Dan Rather, and they listen to the Republicans and the Democrats, and they argue and they talk about the economy and one thing and another and housing and so on. But they miss the overview. They miss the real issue. They're talking about the frosting on the cake. They haven't been talking about the cake. And so here you are going contrary, and that's exactly where every bimetallist is. All of us who practice bimetallism, we practice the scriptural injunctions, and by doing that, we're always out of step with the majority. That makes us look dumb. And nobody likes to be laughed at and made fun of, so we don't say very much. You know, we just go about our business, you know, and trading, and not very many people know about what we do or how we do it or why, and life goes on, and we don't say much, and everybody looks at us and says, well, those guys are kind of nuts. There's a story in this manual here about Dr. Gary North, who's not very enthusiastic about silver. And I told you about Frank, the guy that bought the palladium when it was at $255 an ounce, or platinum. I guess it was platinum he bought. And it was a $255 or $275 an ounce. It was down near the bottom. And he called me one day and he said, George, I'm going to convert all of my gold into platinum. I said, why, Frank? He says, because it's undervalued. So he did. He converted his gold stocks into platinum. Then the price went up to about $650. One day he called me and he said, well, it's time to sell platinum. And he sold it all and converted it back to gold. Now, what did he do? Well, he took gold and converted it to platinum, ounces. He took ounces of gold and converted them to ounces of platinum. Never risked a dollar, never lost a dime. When the value of the platinum went up by about double or triple, he converted those ounces back into ounces of gold, which now gave him three times as many ounces of gold as he started with. Can you follow what's going on here? So when gold is at $275 an ounce and platinum's at $275 an ounce, they trade straight across. So he took 100 ounces of gold and converted that to 100 ounces of platinum. Then when the platinum moved up to $650, I think now it's around $750 as I recall looking the other day. But it goes from $300 to $600, it doubles. So he takes his 100 ounces of platinum, which are now worth twice as many dollars, aren't they, in value. See where this value comes in? He doesn't have any more platinum ounces. There's no more platinum available on planet Earth than there was the day before he made the trade. It's just that for some reason in the market, the quirk in the market was that platinum was priced too low. Now he takes his 100 ounces of platinum and goes back into the marketplace and buys 200 ounces of gold. Now, he started the process with 100 ounces of gold. Now he has doubled his inventory of gold, irrespective of what that gold is valued at. He has 200 ounces of gold. He started with 100. So silver isn't the only metal that you can do this with. You could do this with copper or iron or steel or molybdenum. You could do it with anything that you want. But remember this adage. Always remember. Gold is gold when you have it in your hand, but when it's in somebody else's hand, paper gold isn't gold. Physicals. And when you go to take physical delivery of copper, well, that stuff weighs a lot, and it takes a big spot to put it in. And you don't want to leave your inventory with somebody else. Always remember, don't ever leave your inventory with somebody else. Now, here's the final reason to buy silver. In 1997 and 98, Warren Buffett, one of the world's richest men and greatest investors, bought 129.5 million ounces of silver. So there's your number, about 130 million ounces. Warren Buffett bought silver, not gold. Now, what do you think Buffett knows that you and I don't know? Well, I'd say probably plenty. Now, I do not advocate a buy-and-hold strategy for investing in silver. Rather, we should be able to increase our holdings of both gold and silver by playing the gold-silver ratio. When the ratio is relatively high, as it is right now, we swap gold for silver. When the ratio is low, we swap silver for gold. Not on every trade, we increase the number of ounces and the ultimate performance of our precious metals investment. And also, from time to time, I'll recommend several silver for silver trading strategies, swapping high premium silver for low premium. Now, I can't tell you in advance what we will trade or for what or when, because that depends on how the market unfolds. But I'll let my subscribers know when those opportunities arise. Now, remember, we're talking about the Money Changer. I may give you the name and number here again. The Money Changer is published by Franklin Sanders. Number one, I recommend that you subscribe, not because I make any money off of it or because Franklin Sanders is my great buddy. He's a good guy. I don't mean to say that he isn't, but I want to give you a little disclaimer here. The law and editorial review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do that 7 days a week. And the sources of our information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. But the law or an editorial review gives credit to the authors and publishers that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, the endorsements or recommendations that we give does not necessarily mean that the authors or the publications that we recommend or endorse will reciprocate by endorsing the Law Hour or George Gordon. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans who do not endorse the opinions or beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and editorial review. So keeping that in mind, just because I see something that looks like it's valuable and I want to bring that to my listening audience, doesn't mean that the publication that I endorse necessarily endorses me. So don't be put out, you know, if somebody says, hey, that Law Hour and that George Gordon is a bunch of nuts. I've had that happen more than once. People call here and say, well, gosh, I told them about you, Mr. Gordon, and he said, well, that Gordon is the lowest low life that God ever put breath into. So if that happens, that's fine. Don't let that bother you. But that doesn't change the fact that the information that we bring to you on the Law Hour is true, accurate, and correct to the best of our research, knowledge, and belief. Now, this book, this manual, is put out by the money changer, Franklin Sanders, at West Point, Tennessee. Post Office Box 178, so you got the name and a phone number here. That's Franklin Sanders, the money changer, P.O. Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Now, I called Sanders the other day and I asked him what the price was. It lists for $199. So if you're a non-subscriber, it's $199. As a subscriber to the money changer, you can get it for $49 plus shipping and handling, which is $5. That's $54. And he said that he would make it available to all of the Law Hour listeners if you just tell them, you know, ahead of time that, hey, Gordon is doing a series on this manual. That's how good I thought it was. I'm going to do a series on it. And you can get it at the same price as the money changer subscribers at the reduced $54 price. And let me tell you, it's worth every nickel. Even if you don't buy, sell, and trade, the information, the historical references, and the charts, just the education is worth the $54. So you won't be out a dime. But the trading strategy is so unique. Not that I didn't know about it before. I did. Not that other traders didn't know it. They do. This is the only guy that I've ever seen sit down and write up a manual for lay people and explain the terms that are used in trades, you know, by the traders themselves in the back rooms, where we're selling you gold coins for 25% premiums. Ripping you off is what it boils down to. I can't justify selling these numismatic coins, and some of the best newsletter writers in the business are selling numismatics, and there's a market out there for it. All I'm telling you is that you're paying 25%. Now, if you want to test it, just go into any coin store and buy a $1,000 coin. Then come back the following week, put the $1,000 coin on the counter, and tell the guy you want to sell it, and see what it costs. You're going to pay $1,000 when you buy the coin, and he's going to pay you $750 when you sell it. You're going to pay $250. Now, that's going to be the best $250 that you ever threw away. Because if you have to learn from experience, why don't you do it with $1,000? Just go into any coin store, buy a $1,000 coin, walk out of there with it, bring it back the following week, put it on the counter, and it's going to cost you $250 to make that transaction. Now, that's value for substance. That's numismatics. And if you do that, you'll learn a lesson. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, those of us that do the trading out here in the real world, the guys that make a little money at it, what we advocate is that you pay the smallest possible premium. Now, I pay premiums as low as 2% on a trade. 2%. And I want to share that with you. Now, you're not always going to pay 2% because volume comes into the picture. A $100,000 transaction should cost you 2%. A $1,000 transaction may cost you 7%. $2,000, $4,000, $8,000, $12,000, so on up the line. It'll cost you 4%, 3%, you know, and then they'll even split that in half. It's 3.5% and 2.5%. And you want to shop around because when you make these trades, remember, every dollar that you save goes right to your bottom line. Every dollar that you save is a dollar of profit. Now, let's take a look here at the red herrings that come up. You know, oftentimes people want to throw a little cold water on me, and they say, you know, Gordon, you're nuts. Here's why. Silver is a dead letter issue. And I'd listen to people, and I said, that's fine. I've never spent any time defending silver as opposed to gold. If people want to buy gold and they want to pay numismatic premiums, that's fine with me. But then they call me and they want to buy from me and they want me to absorb those big premiums. And when I don't, they're bitterly disappointed. When you pay $1,000 for a coin, you want to trade that coin to me for $1,000. So when I tell you that coin's not worth $1,000. Now the real value of a coin is 50% of its market price. That's what its real cash value is. And when you're trading numismatics, your broker, when he gets to know you well, he'll give you 3/4 of it. He'll give you 3/4. If you buy it this week, you sell it next week, he'll give you 75%. He wants to keep you in the game, but he's in the business of making money, and it's a whole lot better for him to make a 25% commission. What do you think he paid for that coin when he sold it to you for $1,000? Well, like as not, he paid $500 for it. He certainly didn't pay over $750 for it. So when he sells it to you, he either doubles his money or he makes 25%. Now, that's the way that game is played, and so when he buys it back from you, he does the same thing. But there are a lot of red herrings out there. So listen to this. Not long ago, I allowed a couple of past money changer articles to be published on thegoldeagle.com that generated some email, among it a letter from a man who asked me about a silver article published on Grant's Interest Rate Observer website. Now, since Grant's unquestionably qualifies for the big league of financial commentary, ought to show proper humility responding to anything that appears there. Now, however, this article, written by Andrew Cashdan, missed the point badly. That was more important because this article, which appeared on August 8, 2000, was echoed throughout the financial press, with or without attribution, as being gospel. And it's just plain wrong on several points. I offer it here as a once-and-for-all refutation of the red herring that appears regularly once or twice a year. That digital photography will soon replace silver photography and sap all the demand for silver. Every green analyst unfamiliar with silver runs to this red herring, not recognizing the stench of invalidity. All right, let me take you back. I got a couple of minutes here. I got to take a break. But let me take you back and let me show you what happened to gold. Gold hit $835 an ounce in 1980 and then dropped to a low of about $275. Well, all you got to do is take $275 and divide that by the $830 or $35. And you've got a 68% decline. Nearly 70% decline in its value. So what happened here was gold peaked in its bear market and then it dropped to 32%. All right, now silver did the same thing. It ran up from 90 cents up to $50. Now it's a 5,000% increase. Then it dropped from 50 down to 15 almost overnight, just within a couple of 3 weeks. It went from 50 to 15. And then it leveled off at 15, and then slowly but surely it went to 14 and 13, and you know, it went on down from there. Now, that's measured in 1980 dollars. Now, there is this other factor. Keep in mind that 1980 dollars today are worth 50 cents on the dollar in purchasing power. So every 1980 dollar today only buys 50 cents. It takes $2 today to buy what you could buy in 1980. So if 1980 $800 gold was the right price, then $1,600 gold is the correct price today. But it's only priced at $400. Now the truth of the matter is, the gold was overpriced at $800 and we've lost half of our purchasing power from 1980 to today. Can you follow that? All right. Remember that these markets, when they reach their peak, they drop to about one-third of their previous peak. Sometimes they drop about 90 or 95% of their previous peak. So it's important that you sell out. You should not be wedded or married to gold or silver or platinum or palladium or your house or anything else. Everything's for sale when the price is right. That's where profit is made. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. you know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant. It was negotiated by Moses about 3,300 years ago out at Mount Sinai. You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said back in the 2000 election that what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. There's no money in public business, and there's certainly no money in jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of that old covenant contract and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults and order my free General Law CD package at the same time. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Talking about red herrings as it relates to silver. You see, silver at $50 an ounce in 1980 and down to $5, $6, $7 today. And it's been as low as $3.50. So it already bottomed out at $3.50. So if you're waiting to buy silver until it goes back down to $3 or $4, you're going to miss this cycle. It's already doubled from $3.50 to $7. It'll double again from $7 to $14 and $14 to $28. And $28 to $56, I'm pretty sure, is in the cards. And then $56 to $100 or more, I think, is also in the cards. Why do I think that? Not because silver is more valuable, because the paper is getting to be less and less valuable. See, the president is in the process of printing another $4 trillion worth of new paper to stimulate the stagnant economy. You know, that's the policy of America. That's the policy of the Federal Reserve, the Republican Party, the Congress. George Gordon's not going to stop it. I think that it's a dumb policy, and I think it's counterproductive. But shucks, who am I to get in the way of the happiness and success of 270 million Americans? But while 270 million Americans are clamoring over more and more paper, little Georgie Gordon is clamoring over more and more silver, and I'm here to tell you why. Now, Cash Dan presents the digital, that's the digital camera, is going to replace silver in photography argument as if no one else had ever discovered it. Well, here's the surprise. Every silver analyst for the past 20 years has landed on this same spot. Now, they've been saying year after year that digital photography would replace silver in photography. Now, there's a surprise. Year after year, the amount of silver used in photography has been increasing for the last 20 years. Now, you can see chart 16, photographic silver usage, on page 40A. The usage increase is not quite as steep as it was before there, because the figures before 1990 do not include the Eastern Bloc usage. Silver may someday be replaced in photography, but not by digital anytime soon. Not in this bear market. Not in this bull market. Now, there's no other physical substance that has an electron shell that behaves like silver halide salts in the presence of light. So whatever technology replaces silver has to come from some completely different angle. But it won't be salts of boron or salts of magnesium or digital photography. You can just ask any physical chemist. And second, even though the price of digital has fallen and will continue to fall, nobody in his right mind would conclude that an $800 digital camera and a $2,000 computer needed to make it work offers a near substitute for a $10 disposable camera from Walmart. And that's why it becomes even more ridiculous when you compare resolution. You see, 6 to 8 orders of magnitude greater resolution with silver halide technology over digital. Hey, Margaret, is that you or the Doberman in the digital picture? I wished it focused a little sharper. Now, number 3, the next great surge in consumption of photography will come from Asia. Now, what will these eager new consumers buy? An $800 digital camera with a $2,000 supercomputer or a $10 disposable camera from Walmart? And number 4, it is, of course, possible that something might be discovered to replace silver halide technology. Now, if that happened tomorrow, how long would it take to replace silver halide technology totally? There are a lot of cameras out there, a lot of Fox Photoshops. The answer to that question is it's going to take a long time. For the past 20 years, analysts have been predicting digital would replace silver halide. Not only has it failed to happen yet, the use of photographic silver continues to rise year after year, despite market share loss to digital. And then finally, digital will not replace silver in photography at any time material to the present silver bull market, that is, the next 10 years. Now, if you can't change the numbers, then change the denominator. So Mr. Cashdan also twists statistics to make his point. Now, that's just not fair. It's not kosher. To compare how much silver photography consumes of newly mined silver skews the picture. It makes the denominator smaller than if it were compared to total silver supply or total silver fabrication demand. So it makes photography appear to consume more silver relative to other uses than it really does. Now, the three major categories of silver use consume roughly equal proportions of silver. That is, industrial, photography, and jewelry. Now, jewelry and silverware go together. I would throw coins and metals into that last category as well. Now, in 1999, industrial used 340 million ounces. 340 million ounces were used in industry. Photography used 226 million ounces, and jewelry and silverware with coins and metals about 305 million ounces. So roughly these three areas take about 300 million ounces per year each. Now you can see that photography is a very important use, but by no means an exclusive use of silver. So Mr. Cashdan also neglects to point out that relative stability of photographic silver demand, probably because it would mess up his digital derailment thesis. 1993 to 2002, silver used in photography amounted to 199 million ounces, 201, 210, 212, 219, 225, 226, then 220, 213, and 205 million ounces every year. Hardly pining away. Thus, he misses the really big action in silver, namely jewelry and industrial uses. So he missed the big story. The real swing in either demand has come from India and jewelry, also known as investment demand over there in India. This is a function of Indian agricultural incomes and Indian import and tax policy. This is where big sudden changes can arise, not from photography, but jewelry. The big change in India, 1 billion people in the market. Photography is a red herring. And none too fresh a fish at that. Now, like some wide-eyed cub reporter, Mr. Cashdan quotes a Kodak company spokesman who has no interest at all in propagandizing his company's product, right? As saying that by Christmas, using a lower-end camera and an inkjet printer, people will consider digital to be comparable to traditional film. flashing for the moment past my previous criticism that you have to buy not only the digital camera, but other equipment as well, this statement is totally worthless. People? Who? What people? Where? Is there a survey or a poll? Will consider their value judgments will be changed by means not identified? Digital, comparable to traditional? Come on, troops. But isn't it already comparable to traditional film? Well, considering the difference in resolution between digital and silver halide, the people that he has in mind must be legally blind. It's a bad analysis, coupled with bad manners. Now, were I grading a freshman English paper, I would view this whole photography focus as someone waxing expansive on a narrow area because he had failed to research his subject thoroughly. It misses the point analyzing silver, and I also find Cash Dan's referral to the widely respected CPM group as delusional. To step over the bounds of well-mannered debate, it shows both unworthy arrogance and ignorance. Now let me tell you one more little factor that comes into the scenario here. The thing that moves silver or gold isn't its industrial use, it's its monetary use. In 1979, interest rates in the United States hit 21%. It just drove everybody nuts. And there was a gigantic fleeing from paper to gold and silver. In order to satisfy the demand, the price of silver went up. As the price of silver went up, people who had silver and could remember that silver was 90 cents an ounce. In 1943, the price of silver was 34 cents an ounce. I'm telling you, boys and girls, the federal government in the 1940s, during World War II, was buying silver for 34 cents an ounce and minting coins, you know, like silver dollars, and putting 9/10 of an ounce into it and selling it for a dollar. They're putting 9/10 of an ounce and selling for a dollar, paying 34 cents for it. See, silver was cheap. You know, as you look at it historically. Then after World War II, it stabilized at 90 cents an ounce. They priced it at $129.29 to the dollar in measuring silver against gold. Then it moved from that 90 cents up to $50. That was the bull market. From 1960 to 1980, that phenomenal bull market. So people took all their silver flatware, they took everything they could and sold it for $50 an ounce. Now the price has to reach a certain level before it will entice people to go take their class rings and their baubles and bangles and silver jewelry, etc., and then go cash it in. Now before you do that, you want to tuck this away in your heart. When you cash that silver in, you're cashing it in for cheaper and cheaper dollars. You're not cashing that in now for $1980 at $50 an ounce. You'd be cashing it in today in $2004, which are worth half as much. So you'll be getting 50 cent dollars. Even if the price of silver was $50 an ounce today, its purchasing power price is actually 25. Now don't ever forget to factor in the purchasing power of this paper value. I mean, if you want to play the game, let's play it intelligently. Now, what we're talking about here is trading gold that you have in your grubby little fist for silver which you have in your grubby little fist. Never under any circumstances do you trade it for paper money, unless it's in a short transaction where you trade the gold for paper and then trade the paper for palladium or platinum or something else. Now that's a legitimate business transaction, but keep in mind the tax consequences come into play whenever you use these Federal Reserve notes, checks, commercial paper, etc. And then you got a tax liability. So first of all, you got the loss in purchasing power in the paper, and then secondly, you got the tax consequences that come on top of that, and then you've got the transportation and the commissions. All right, now make sure that you factor all of these factors in. Now that's what this book does. This manual factors those in for you so that you don't forget, like people do today, that when they paid $30,000 or $40,000 for a house 30 years ago and they want to sell it for $150,000 today, they say, gosh, I made a $100,000 profit. No, you made a $90,000 loss in purchasing power. You had a $90,000 loss. I'll cover that with you shortly. We'll take a look at housing because the housing market's just about reached the peak of its bubble. So if you've got a house, you might want to sell that house, convert that house to gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil, and come back into the marketplace in 5 years. Now let me show you something. 1927 to 35. Russell Harvey sold all of his stocks in 1927. Everybody laughed at him. 1935. Now that's 8 years later. He comes back into the marketplace. He'd sold this stock for around $275 a share. He came back and bought those same shares in 1935 for $5 a share. Now let me show you how that works up. Let's take 275 and divide that by 5. That's 55 times. So he sold his shares in 1927 and came back in and got 55 times more shares. He got 55 shares. Now, of course, in 1935, they're only valued at $5. Wait a minute. He sold them for $275. That was the peak of the bubble. They were way overpriced. Came back into the market in 1935. Now, nobody's got money. This is the guy with the money. It's the flood that occurred in 1955. Remember that story? Frank Roach has got 650 tons of hay. He can feed his cows. The neighbor can't. So Frank goes to the auction, and the neighbor's selling his cows, and Frank is there buying them. He's the only one in the valley that's got the, well, not the only one, but he was one of the few ranchers in the valley that had the hay to feed them. Wasn't his fault that the next-door neighbor over there had guessed the market incorrectly or got caught up in the flood. I mean, those are the factors that come up in business. Those are some of the vagaries that come up in life. Now, why is the silver lease rate so low? And what about newly mined silver? And what about recycling and Buffett? Well, let's take a look at the Buffett story over here again. Mr. Cash Dan makes an amazing discovery. He says photographic silver users actually recycle silver. What a sleuth. This is the hottest news item of the last 160 years. So long as silver has been used in photography, it's been recycled. So what? So what's the point? So Mr. Cashdan says that Warren Buffett, silver represents an overhang rather than a vote of confidence. Ah, now that's a matter of interpretation, and one not to wax too cocky about. Time will unfold that mystery, but at present, Mr. Buffett's investment seems to have placed a floor under silver, and in 2004, he's still holding on to his 130 million ounce silver hoard, and no sign of selling. Now, Buffett could sell his silver in the morning and make a good profit, couldn't he? He could double his money. But he hasn't sold it, has he? Well, now, if you're sitting on top of a product, it's because you must think that it's going to be worth more later or you'd sell it today. Either you need it, and Buffett is using it for his photographic business, or he's using it like Scrooge McDuck, and he's got his little bulldozer there in his vault, and he gets on his bulldozer and pushes his silver coins around, or he's hanging on to it, and he says to himself, I think this $7 silver is going to $14. Or I think this $14 silver is going to $28, or $28 silver is going to $56, and so on. My $15 silver is going up to $30. It has to, because I lost half my purchasing power from 1980 to today, didn't I? Then I've got silver at $10, and silver at $9.87654. Cheapest I ever bought it for was $4, I think it was, or $4.50. Maybe even $4.75. But here's the point to keep in mind. I've made it before. I had the paper in 1990, and I had to convert it to something. So I converted it to silver. I had the paper in 1980, 85, 90, 95, and 2000. I had to convert it to something. Here's the trick. I converted it to something and I hung on to it. And that's what Franklin Sanders is telling you here. You convert it to something and hang on to it. My broker, Frank, converted his gold to platinum. And when he converted it to platinum, he hung on to the platinum until he thought the platinum had about peaked. It didn't. He sold it at $650 or $700. It's higher than that now. Hell, it may be as high as $800. I think it went up to $800. But when it got up to double, he converted back. And now he's got the gold. And when the gold goes up relative to platinum, palladium, silver, or something else, he'll trade it again. Now, that's the thrust of this manual. And that's why I keep telling you, I think it's one of the most startling revelations that I've seen come across my desk. And I've been at this business now for over 20 years. And it's a tragedy that I didn't think about it myself and published the book. I don't know if Franklin's going to make any money off of his book, but let's see if we can help him and help you at the same time. Remember, this is The Money Changer, Franklin Sanders, West Point, Tennessee. Post Office Box 178. And the zip code there is 38486. Now, once again, that's The Money Changer, Franklin Sanders, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Now, you can call and chit-chat if you want. The number is 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. Now, to get the $54 price, you've got to tell him that you heard about it on the Law Hour. Or, if you don't want to do that, subscribe to The Money Changer. For those of you that are already subscribers to The Money Changer, you already received this in the mail. I did. And I thought it was so good that I'd share it with all of you lay people out there. You should get a subscription to The Money Changer, number one. It's a monthly newsletter, 12 issues per year. And The Privateer comes out 25 times a year. And keep yourself abreast of the economy. Don't pay attention to Kerry and Bush talking about the economy. Pay attention to what the insiders are telling you, what the financial analysts are telling you about the real world of economics. That is not a rosy picture out there, boys and girls, but there are great opportunities. At the expense of the loser, there are great opportunities to make great profits. I'm expecting to make great profits in real estate, great profits in metals. I'm not expecting any profits in stocks and bonds. I'm not expecting any profits in dollars. Those are what you want to be selling short. Selling short is also explained in here, and he'll tell you a few of the stories that go along with these various terms. Now, a lot of times people will ask me, should I buy silver coins or should I buy bars? Silver coin or bars? And that's a good question. I don't know how much money you've got. If you've got $1 million and you want to convert $1 million into silver, there's a couple of things that you need to consider. First of all, can you afford to lose your $1 million? That's right. Whatever it is that you're going to invest in, whatever this product is, can you afford to lose it? You never invest more than you can afford to lose, and this is called diversity. Diversity. You diversify your portfolio. You don't buy all Enron stock. That's what those Enron employees did. They were invested in Enron stock, and then when Enron collapsed, they lost everything. So at the very bare minimum, you never invest more than one-third of your total assets in any one project. Never invest more than one-third of your total assets. Now, your total assets are your home, automobile, bank accounts, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. And before you invest any money in precious metals, you need a 4-year supply of food, don't you? You know, food, clothing, and shelter. Before you invest a dollar in gold or silver, don't you need your home free and clear? Free and clear. I know this is a wild new concept for most of you, but have you ever thought about owning your own home and not making any payments on it? I mean, when the first of the month comes by, you don't write a check out to the mortgage company and you don't write a check out to pay the rent. Now, if you've got your house free and clear, and you're employed, and you've got some spare change, how much spare change have you got? If it's $100,000, then you can afford to lose $100,000. You see, I've got my house paid for. I'm not paying rent, not paying the mortgage company, and I'm not making payments to anybody. I don't have a big credit card debt. So if I go out and I make $100 this week, then I've got $100 that I can invest in something. Now, that's the kind of money that you want to invest. You need a 4-year supply of food. You need a house that's free and clear. You need a job, or you need an employment. You need a source of either income or property that you can support yourself on. Not the government dole, not Social Security, not welfare and WIC. I mean, you got to be able to support yourself. Now, if you're in that position, then you can talk about precious metals. Which brings us here to Chapter 10, should I buy silver coins or bars? Now, a few days ago, a reader sent me a quotation from a website. And it said, in 1980, discounts approached 50% for very good reasons. Extreme pressure from sellers anxious to cash in. Refiners were backed up and didn't want any more silver. Buyers had trouble with the cash flow required to make deals at such high prices. And buyers took on the risk of a sudden price collapse before they could turn the coins around. Now, this statement contains a misstatement of fact and leads to wrong conclusions. In 1980, the discount on U.S. 90% silver coin bags, U.S. silver dollar bags, and U.S. 40% silver coin bags did not approach 50%. Now, the highest I never saw, and I was there, was 30 to 35%. On the 40% halves. But the same was true of every other form of physical silver, that is, the 3-9 fine 100-ounce, 10-ounce, and 1-ounce bars and coins also showed the same discounts because they, too, had to be melted and refined before they could be tendered on the exchange. This is an important point. The presupposition here may mislead today's investors. At the 1980 silver peak, the squeeze was on for exchange deliverable silver. You see, when you've got silver flatware, or you've got silver bars, or you've got silver in some other form, if it's not in bars that can go onto the COMEX, you don't have tradable merchandise. So let's understand what it is, the trades, and what these discounts are. Because you may have silver rounds from Sunshine Mines, and that's wonderful. But you got to find a buyer. And when this market is going into its panic phase, you need to unload your silver and convert it back to gold. You can't be stuck with something that you can't get rid of. Time is of the essence, as the old saying goes. Better off to be a year too early than to be one day late. You can't be late. That's why you want physical possession, because physical possession says, even if I'm a day late, I haven't lost anything. I might have missed the opportunity to make a great profit, but I never lost anything. I don't have to make a nickel's worth of profit on my $15 silver. I already bought it, paid for it, I'm in possession of it. All you can say is, well, Gordon, you paid too much. Okay, but I've got my product. It isn't like I paid $15 for it, and then some guy went bankrupt, and I lost it all. I still got the product. Well, I'm about out of time. We're going to have to break it off here again, and we'll take it up here again next time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to the website, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public, brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, and so on. Hey, there's a signal that says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.